It's The Record on KUOW with David Hyde. I'm Marcy Silman. Seattle Public School students are on winter break until Monday, but even though I imagine Superintendent Jose Bonda had the holiday off, my guess is that his mind stayed focused on the task at hand, keeping the biggest district in this state on track. Jose Bonda has been the man in charge of Seattle schools for about a year and a half now. He tackles issues from standardized testing to school overcrowding. Coming up, he'll be overseeing implementation of a new set of educational standards called the Common Core. Jose Bonda, welcome back to The Record.
Hi, Marcy.
It's great to have you here. Well, one of the first public conflicts, I think, that came your way was over something called the Measure of Academic Progress, the MAP test. How does that compare to what we're seeing with the Common Core? That is also a set of standards, right?
Well, I think, they're two separate things. So we have the Common Core state standards, which is what Washington has agreed to do, and also in agreement with other states across the nation. The MAP was really nothing. It was not aligned to the standards. It never was aligned to the standards. It's more of a measurement of how students are progressing. It wasn't even, grade level.
It just was a test.
It was just a test to see how well the students were performing, starting out at a certain level, and then it had the ability to keep the students moving forward as long as they did well on the answers.
So the Common Core is in alignment with, I think, 48 states have agreed to participate, if I'm not mistaken, in this common set of standards, and I assume, maybe wrongly, but I'm assuming that there is some kind of testing involved in making sure that students would meet those.
Yes, and that is the Smarter Balance. So what we're looking at is Smarter Balance, new suite of assessments that will take the place of what we're using currently that the state requires us to use for being able to give them the data and student achievement data.
So where is the Seattle district in the process of implementing the Common Core standards?
So we've been working on the Common Core state standards for a couple years now, and this year we're doing an extensive professional development with our teachers and our principals, really making sure that we provide them with the support and the training that is required to be able to roll effectively into the Common Core state standards. So our goal is to be able to move into the Common Core state standards by the start of the next school year. So that training will continue on through the end of the year. And we feel, again, that we'll be ready to roll into that.
So that's September of this year, 2014. Right. Will testing to measure achievement of those core standards be in place as well by that point in time?
Well, that's still to be determined. You know, we're still haven't gotten a lot back from the state in terms of how that's going to transition. So we are transitioning from a set of assessments into a new suite of assessments. How that aligns and how well it aligns to the new Common Core state standards still remains to be seen.
So are you saying that a lot of that has to come from the Office of the State Public Superintendent of Public Instruction?
Correct.
Okay. And these would replace what my son took, the WASL test.
Correct.
Okay. We're talking with Seattle Public School Superintendent Jose Bonda, and there are so many issues. We don't have all 2 hours to talk about them. But one thing that has happened also under your tenure is a surge in enrollment in the Seattle Public Schools, which has caused overcrowding in certain parts of the city. Where is the district in terms of figuring out how to make sure that every school has an appropriate number of students?
That's been a challenge for us. So we've been growing by over 1,000 students a year for the past 4 or 5 years. The projections are we're going to continue to grow. That growth is impacting the north and the northeast part of Seattle public schools and part of the city. So what we're doing is with the passage of the BECS 4, which was supported by our voters here in Seattle, it's given us now the resources to be able to go out and open some new schools, to build some more
BECS capacity. BECS is building for
excellence.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
It was the levy, the school levy.
Correct, building to excellence.
So you're going to refurbish buildings that exist, reopen shuttered schools? What exactly?
We're actually building new schools. We're repurposing schools. We're modernizing schools. And so that gives us the opportunity to provide some additional seats. But if this surge, as you referred to it, continues, it'll continue to be a challenge for us as we move forward. Next year, we're looking at reopening up a couple of schools that will take place in the north and then also out in West Seattle.
How much does it cost to reopen a shuttered school?
Well, it really depends on the condition of the school. See, some of these schools have only been offline for a few years. Some of them have been offline for a number of years. So depending, it could be anywhere from 2 to 3 million to, you know, $5, $6, $7, $8 million.
Another goal of the district, which started before you arrived, but I believe continues, is making sure that access to gifted, for lack of a better term, high achieving, high standards curricula is available in more places than has been. How does expanding the APP and the Spectrum programs, or whatever they're called now, the upper level learning programs, how does that dovetail with new construction of schools or reopening schools?
It dovetails into the new construction opening of schools. It also dovetails into our boundary changes that we just went through. So we went through an extensive boundary rework. And so that was also a consideration. We need to know where programs, where we intend to have programs. And so what it's going to do, it's going to allow us to be able to be more equitable with the distribution of those programs, to make sure that they're accessible to all students. So we are looking at, even in the moving forward with the new construction program, we have APP moving into what is presently the Wilson Pacific building, which will be rebuilt, and it's yet to be named, moving into the elementary building there. But then we've created three pathways for the middle school. And so those will be taking care of the students moving forward.
What about the Native American Heritage Program that was housed at Wilson Pacific?
Well, that one is still to be decided. I know there's some initial conversations around combining that with the old Pinehurst.
Mm-hmm.
Alternative school. And so that still remains to be seen. We're just in very initial conversations around that. But really wanted to add one more thing to the gifted and talented mm-hmm. programs is that, you know, we have a task force that's looked at the eligibility criteria, and now we're getting ready to put together another task force that'll be looking at how we go about delivering those services to students. We think we can do a better job of doing that in terms of providing that type of a rigorous program that challenges kids.
Another rigorous program that exists in a couple of the high schools right now is the International Baccalaureate Program. Two or three high schools, I think, offer that curricula. Is there any talk of expanding that? Because when you talk about rigor, it's pretty rigorous.
Yes. So we did expand it this past year. So Rainier Beach High School it started their new International Baccalaureate Program this year, and it's gotten off to a really good start. And we also received some funding through the Race to the Top funding sources to be able to support the IB programs that exist in the other high schools as well. So we will continue to look at that in terms of providing additional challenges for our students and providing that level of rigor that prepares them for 21st century learning.
I'm talking with Jose Banda, who's the man in charge of the Seattle Public School District. He's been here about 18 months or so, a little more than that. We've been talking about students, assessing students, providing for students. The other half of that equation, of course, is teachers. And one big issue has been, how do you measure the effectiveness of a teacher? And some of that's been tied to federal money. Where do we stand right now in Seattle in assessing a teacher's performance?
So we have what's called the Professional Growth and Evaluation System. It's something that we developed jointly with the Teachers Union a few years ago, and one that we reaffirmed through a collective bargaining agreement recently this fall. We continue to move into that. So that's been a rollout, and so we're almost pretty much through the whole rollout. And we really feel that that's the way to go, because it really provides a closer look at teachers' performance in the classroom and their abilities to be able to deliver that instruction to all students in a very rigorous manner, but also provides a lot of support systems for them to be able to do that.
So that's instead of just simply using how a student achieves on a performance test to measure the teacher performance.
Well, student data or student information is part of that evaluation tool. So when the principals look at performance, they look at not only are they meeting all of the domains that are outlined, but also looking at how the student data it comes out. If that indicates that there's the students are not performing, that's just an indicator. It's not something that's counted against them necessarily, but it's an indicator that principal needs to take a closer look and be in the classroom more often and provide more support systems for that teacher.
Well, Jose Banda, I hope you come back and visit us again very soon.
Thank you.
This is The Record on KUOW. I'm Marcy Silman.